Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. We are delighted to welcome with us this morning students, Southwest Wisconsin Technical College. Would those students please stand? Thank you for coming this morning. You may be seated. And we have, is it Preble or Preble High School? Preble. Thank you for telling me the correct pronunciation. Will those students please stand? We want to welcome all of you for this oral argument. You may be seated. Students come to hear oral argument for a variety of reasons, but one is because they're invited. And some are invited under our Court with Class program, which invites students from around the state to come for an oral argument. We send them the briefs of the case, plus other materials, and the students themselves with their faculty get other materials and sometimes invite counsel to appear before them. This is a national award-winning program, and we are very proud of it, and we're delighted to welcome you. And another part of this program is that after an oral argument, the students meet with a member of this court to discuss the procedures the court follows, not the substantive arguments on the cases. Today, we are going to have this presentation with the justice immediately following this argument, which should be about 10:45. And then we meet again, the court meets again at 1:45 for an oral argument. And today, the presentation will be by Justice Sykes, who is sitting on my far right. And seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. Seated to my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To her left, Justice David Prosser. And on the far left, Justice Patience Rogensack. With these introductions made, I'll turn to the first case, which is 02-0947, State v. Michael Jackson. Arguing for the defendant, Michael Jackson, is Joseph E. Schubert. Mr. Schubert, you may approach the podium and begin your argument. Well, you may be struggling, but your client got less than the maximum, whatever, however you calculate the maximum, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so you're not really hurt. Why are you here?
Well, Your Honor, according to our interpretation, yes, the trial court and the court of appeals have determined that Mr. Jackson faced an amount of initial confinement time that we feel is higher than
The potential maximum.
Yes.
Right, okay.
And the maximums in the case are, or should be, and are, one of the most important factors that the trial court can and should consider in sentencing. So if the trial court's got the maximums wrong, and it's got a higher than it should be, the sentence, more than likely, well, certainly, it's according to the case law, it's taken. And in this case, although it's not huge, it's something. And also, the idea that the trial court erred in the first place is very important to us. And
that's not that important because we're only dealing with what? two full years in a month, right? 2000, 2001, 2002, three full years in a month.
That's when you sit in the prison, Your Honor. Every day, this is the same. Your Honor, I'll see it all day. Talking about the sentencing we're looking at. And one of the first things that comes to mind is the May 2000 article where the Wisconsin lawyer, the article was by Michael Brandon, not a lot of luck. These two, along with other people from the committee, the criminal penalty study, took it and have done a very good job of educating the public as to how to shoot the sentencing statute should be applied. And in that article, and this article is actually saying it, as was the report from the criminal penalty study committee, actually cited by the Volk Court, which is just about the only decision, one of the only decisions that we have in regard to the sentencing, and certainly the only one dealing with the application of the different criminality is not. But anyway, that article states that under the term of sentencing, if the prosecution pleads and approves a penalty enhancer, the maximum initial term of confinement increases by the length of the penalty enhancer, as does the maximum term of imprisonment. And sets the stage. The penalty study committee says that the amount of initial confinement time is increased by the penalty enhancer.
I'm sorry, counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're having trouble hearing you and taping you, so you have to adjust the microphone. Marshall, in what fashion? Up closer to his mouth? Yes, thank you. And how is that? Would you mind?
Is that better? I have no.
Okay, thank you.
So the criminal penalty study in their report, and also in subsequent publications, such as the article written by Judge Brennan, they're saying that the penalty enhancer, in this case 6 years, is an increase in the confinement time. So let's go to the language.
Now, if it increases the confinement time, it automatically increases the total imprisonment time, right?
Yes.
We agree on that? Everybody agrees on that?
Yes.
Apparently? Okay.
Yes. But according to the language.
And one more question. We're not really talking about the Class E felony, are we? That's quite clear under the statute, and there's nothing, no problem about that. It fits the 25%, it fits the confinement time. Is that right? Are we really only debating the unclassified, or am I wrong?
No, we're debating both of them.
Okay.
And it's set up, we're going to the language of two statutes.
Okay.
O1-2C provides the maximum term of confinement in prison and underlying confinement specified in paragraph B. That's where they set forth the maximum confinement to reach felony level, may be increased by any applicable, let's underline the stress, applicable penalty enhancer. When we go to the penalty enhancer, which was pled and proved in this case, 939.621, that provides that if the actor is a repeater, the maximum term of imprisonment, underlying imprisonment, prescribed by law in that crime may be increased, and it so be, but not more than 6 years. That's the one that applies. The fact that one statute states confinement and one section states imprisonment is very critical in the interpretation of the statutes and critical in this case. You're using the criminal penalty study committee, the article, they said it's increased, the confinement time is increased by the entire amount, 6 years, even though that penalty enhancer refers to a prison. Well, the criminal penalty sites, though, at seminars, at dozens of seminars, I've spoken to Judge Brennan, I've spoken to Judge Bieber, and they'd say, And I submit that's exactly what it seems to me.
Well, they're also applying, you mentioned the Volk decision, they're also applying Volk. In other words, Volk is the case that I believe the Court of Appeals relies on also.
In Volk, the issue was not maximum amount of confinement. That was never challenged by any party. That issue wasn't before the court. The only issue before the court in Volk was whether extended supervision could be a component of the penalty case.
And what did Volk say?
Volk said that it could not. I take issue with this.
Well.
And I'll go over some of the reasons why. Even on that issue, although it's not an important part of the case, because we can find the time is. The Court of Appeals and Volk said that the report, which says the report, these enhancers increase the maximum term of confinement for the underlying crime and increase the overall maximum term of imprisonment as well, so they're not likely the maximum term of sentence for the underlying crime.
I didn't hear the last. I was trying to did the last sentence.
The last sentence. This was the criminal penalty study report that was cited by the whole.
Yes. Thank you,
Mr. Schubert. Mr. Schubert, you're relying on 939.63, I think it is, for that word imprisonment. And that if this were all, if this had all passed at the same time, that would be pretty compelling. But you had Truth in Sentencing coming along quite a bit after that. And that term, the term there is confinement, not imprisonment. Now, why shouldn't we apply the later of the two statutes?
Well, we have to apply both. In harmonize them, they're not in conflict. But the fact is that confinement doesn't mean the same as imprisonment. And the legislature chose not to change the original criminality enhancement statute. In 973.01, in the various subsections in there, we know the definition of confinement. We know the definition of extended supervision, but we know the definition of imprisonment. Imprisonment is a total length of a sentence which must be broken down into initial confinement and extended supervision. So the statute, the criminal penalty and enhancement statute, must, by definition, be broken down. And the period of confinement must be removed from that because it doesn't mean the same thing.
That would be true only if the legislature had not adopted subsection 2C in 973.01 in the basic truth in sentencing legislation. If the legislature had not spoken to how courts were to treat penalty enhancers and whether they enhanced confinement or the confinement portion or extended supervision as well. But since the legislature did speak to that issue and specifically directed courts to increase the confinement portion of the sentence by any penalty enhancer, it seems to me that Volk was decided entirely correctly and you lose.
Do you increase the confinement penalty enhancer by a $10,000 increase in fine provided by other penalty enhancers? In my reply brief, I said that the $10,000 increase in fine comes in a crime where you're concealing identity. So not only does it increase the prison, but the $10,000 increase in fine. Shouldn't you look at these official criminality statutes and see if they're full applicable? You know, obviously, the $10,000 increase in fine doesn't increase in fine. Even though the 973.01 2C says confinement is increased by any penalty enhancement. You've got to go to the penalty measures and look at them and extract from them what's happening.
Right, and no one's arguing that the penalty enhancer is not applicable here. I think you've conceded that. And that adds 6 years. And the question is whether that adds 6 years to confinement or 6 years to the total imprisonment, which must be bifurcated between confinement and extended supervision. And the legislature specifically anticipated that question in adopting TIS 1 and said, attach it to the confinement portion. Well, that's what 2C of 97301 says.
You're just saying confinement, maybe increase the penalty enhancer. Let's look at the penalty enhancers and determine whether it increases the confinement. No, if we can make an argument, I'm going to do my client, that because the penalty enhancer, 93962, refers to imprisonment, it doesn't apply at all.
You're not making that argument, though.
It's a rational argument.
But you're not making it. So let's not talk about arguments that you're not making.
Well, the court has to look at these statutes. The Court of Appeals didn't follow either of our arguments. Because it looked at one of these crimes and said that, well, that's, we got to apply that statute that says that extended supervision has to be at least 45% of a confined time. So it went outside the bounds of what we're arguing. I urge the court to look at these statutes and to do the right thing. And quite frankly, the concept of the individual criminality and the answer statute not applying at all is more logical, although it completely throws out the individual criminality statutes, and I don't think the court wants to do that. But logically, it says, it's imprisonment that's enhanced. And the other one says it may be confinement may be increased by the applicable statute. It seems more rational, so that the penalty enhancers won't get to amount that we will confinement time up the imprisonment set forth. That's consistent with the statutes as they existed before truth and sentencing. You know, you talk about legislative history to reinforce the plain meaning of the statutes. Legislative history tells us that before truth and sentencing, the 6 years of imprisonment, you didn't do it because it was subject to parole and subject to the MR. And the time you actually spent behind bars, you were out of the imprisonment. And I suppose the truth and sentencing didn't change that because it still says imprisonment and it's not the same thing.
Counsel? This is a pretty simple approach, but tell me why it's wrong. Your argument is 93962 says penalty enhancers are applied to the term of imprisonment. You then point to 973.01 to C, and you note that the language there is penalty enhancers apply to the term of confinement. You argue, ha-ha, that appears in need of some harmonization because we have two different terms, literally, term of imprisonment and term of confinement. Now I get simplistic. And it's this. So why don't we apply the rule that is oft applied in trying to harmonize, and that is that the more narrow or specific governs. And 973 deals with penalty enhancers in truth in sentencing. End of argument. Can you address that, please?
And they're not at odds. They're not in conflict. So, and when you say apply the more specific, they're actually applying both. They're giving them each their full meaning. Under our interpretation, or our the one we're proposing to the court. Because we say, yes, increase the confinement, but do not increase it by the entire amount that's set forth in 1996-2. Because in 1996-2, it does say imprisonment, and that hasn't been changed. And with new treatment sentencing, the prison has to be opened up.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, finish the answer. C, 973012C, you can say it's totally consistent with 93962-2B. 2B says the maximum term imprisonment is increased by more than six years, right?
Yes.
Imprisonment means confinement plus extended supervision, right? Well, 2C, the last part of the sentence, which you're not paying attention to, says the total length of the bifurcated sentence, which means imprisonment, is increased by the same amount.
Correct.
So what you say is 93962-2B is referring to this last part of 973012C. So they're perfectly consistent. Under 97301, you add the 6 years to confinement, and you also add it to the total imprisonment. And 93962 only talks to total imprisonment. They're fine. They all mesh. Everything is just hunky-dory.
The last sentence in 2C writes that when you increase the confinement, then yes, automatically,
sure. All right.
It doesn't say what length of confinement should be. You still have more than
so your position is you're going to increase this by 6 years. You will recognize the total length of imprisonment, 6 years. But what you have to do is allocate the 6 years. Part to the confinement and part to extended supervision, right?
Yes.
What's your formula?
Well, we go to 973012B6, which provides that probation is not specified above in part B. You apply 75%, then the actual confinement out of that imprisonment is 75%. And it's nice because that statute states that for any felony not specified, and once you have individual
counsel, we're going to just, I'm sorry, we're going to stop you for a moment just so we can get your words onto the tape by giving you a No, that's all right. We've had sound difficulties in this room. We switched for a while into a different sound system, and now we're back to the old sound system, and it's having difficulties. So let's see how we do with the
thank you,
L pin.
This is now I can hear my echo.
All right. Well, you're twice as good then.
Thanks, Your Honor. I knew that's what it would take. But 973012B6 provides for any felony not specified. And once you have the habitual felony enhancer, it becomes a felony not specified. And it's still a Class E felony, for example, the operating under the owner's consent. You know, under Block v. State, it states, hey, you're still convicted of the same crime. It's just that the penalties are enhanced. So you have to take the underlying portion of that, the 2 years out of the five, because 973012C provides the maximum term of confinement specified in sub B may be increased by any applicable penalty enhancer. So you take the the 2 years out of the sub B, but then you got a felony not otherwise specified because you got the enhancer. So if you apply all the statutes and apply them consistently and appropriately, you have to take 75% of the 6 years to, and it would be 54 months to come up with initial confinement. That's the confinement. That's what you have to whittle out of the imprisonment time.
So it's your position that the Class E felony, which is the auto theft count in this case, ceases to become a Class E felony because of the applicable penalty enhancer and becomes an unclassified felony, just like the fleeing, which is the second count?
It's still a Class E felony, but it's now a Class E felony with a penalty enhancer, so it becomes a felony not otherwise specified above.
As to the penalty enhancer, he still gets the two.
Pardon?
Still gets a maximum of two under the original.
Right.
But as to the penalty enhancer, which is six, you're going to apply 75% to get the 25% extended supervision.
Yes.
That's your allocation system.
Yes. And if we agree with...
A little complicated, counsel.
Your Honor, we've had four different opinions so far as to how this law is to be applied. The trial court, the state, the court of appeals, and I. Complicated? Maybe not, but unwieldy, in need of direction, and...
Counselor, I want to interrupt you a minute, and I want you to get your pencil and write something down, and I'm going to ask you to answer this in rebuttal for me. I'm very interested in a formula that's going to work for a variety of sentences, and I'm wondering if we wrote this mathematical formula down, X plus the quantity, so it'll be in parens, 25% of X is equal to the term of confinement plus the enhancer, okay? I want you to tell me if you think that meets your argument. And I don't expect you to do it now. You can think about it a little bit and see if you think it does later. Okay, thank you.
And when you're thinking about that, even if you accepted the Court of Appeals as it set forth, I'm wondering if their mathematics is right in their last couple of paragraphs. They divide by five to get the extended supervision. And when I did the math, and you know lawyers are notoriously good mathematicians, when I did the math, I would have divided by four. So when I did the math, and I think that if you look at it, it may very well meet Justice. It's the same kind of question that Justice Robinsack asked you. The Court of Appeals came down with saying 86.4 months is what's in confinement, correct?
Yes.
That's more than 25% of the total of 108.
Mm-mm. They.
They're supposed to have confinement can't be more. Term of confinement can't exceed 75% of the total. The total imprisonment here would have been 108 months. Is that right? I'm looking only at the fleeing. It would have been 108 months. 75% of 108 months is 81 months. So if confinement can't, if you're applying the 25%, if confinement can't exceed 75%, my math shows it at 81.
That, Your Honor, we're actually, I was coming at it from a different direction than the Court of Appeals. And I would submit, under my interpretation, you would never have to do what the Court of Appeals did, because there couldn't be a circumstance in which the maximum confinement wouldn't allow you to make 25% of the sentence extended supervision. But when we come at it from different directions, that's why we have different answers. The court's looking to that section that says, well, you know, here's our max, but since we have to apply the rule that says 25% of the sentence has to be in extended supervision, we got to knock back the initial confinement, otherwise we couldn't do that. But I'd submit that we actually come up with different answers, the we do and the Court of Appeals does, because I'm saying, no, you got to apply that other statutory section that says the max initial confinement is 75%.
Applying 75% to different numbers.
Yes. And they're saying fifths because they're saying it has to be 25% of this. So they got like a whole plus 25%, which gives them 5 instead of 4, I believe. But I don't feel the Court of Appeals in this case did the right thing. And just as a sideline, the court in Volk states that, oh, because ninth, and it's time for me to stop. So I'll stop.
Thank you.
At least my red light came on.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Would you return the lapel microphone?
Oh, yes.
And then it will be turned off. Thank you. Assistant Attorney General Lara Herman, appearing for the state of Wisconsin.
May it please the Court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Lara Herman, representing the state of Wisconsin. The state has two primary contentions in this case. First, the repeater enhancer statute and the truth in sentencing provisions are plain on their face. They increased the maximum term of initial confinement for Jackson's underlying offenses by 6 years. Second, the Court of Appeals erred in holding that the 25% minimum extended supervision rule applies to the term of confinement with the enhancer. The state believes that the 25% rule applies to the pre-enhancer confinement time. I would like to discuss the problems that the state sees with...
So my math is wrong because I looked at total imprisonment rather than confinement.
The math is completely confusing in this case. The math is very confusing in this case. And that's one of the reasons why the state believes that its interpretation is not only proper, but makes the most sense. It's easier to apply. We don't have to get into these complex equations. It provides clearer guidance to courts and fully complies with the plain language of the statutes. But I'd like to discuss, because this came up in Mr. Schubert's argument, some of the problems with Jackson's approach to how these penalty enhancers apply. The most critical problem the state sees with Jackson's approach is that his argument completely ignores the second sentence of 97301-2C. His 75%, 25% bifurcation rule you'd have to ignore this second sentence of 2C to actually apply his rule, because 2C, as I believe Justice Sykes pointed out, says that if you apply the penalty enhancer to the term of confinement, then the total length of the bifurcated sentence is increased by the same amount.
So you think there's no interplay between subsection C and subsection B6? Is that your position?
My position is that B6 deals with pre-enhancer confinement time. All of subsection B is dealing with how you calculate the maximum term of confinement before you apply a penalty enhancer.
So you see no limitation. The penalty enhancer is just onto its own. It doesn't interrelate except to add on to whatever term of confinement was set out earlier.
Correct.
So then you wouldn't like my formula because essentially my formula takes into account both.
I don't know if you had a chance
to think about it, and if you're not into math, it may seem hard to you. Math is my thing, so to me it makes sense.
Well, I'm glad there's someone who is into math because I know every time I read the Court of Appeals decision, I get confused by the math myself.
Yeah. Okay.
But I also think their decision doesn't comport with the language of the statute. Neither do I think that Mr. Jackson's approach comports with the plain language of the statute.
And it's because you totally disjoin subsection C from the requirement in subsection B. Am I understanding you correctly?
Correct, with respect to the 75% rule in B6.
What about D?
D, get out the language
he
of the statute.
He says the minimum, the term of extended supervision that follows the term of confinement and imprisonment may not be less than 25% of the length of term of confinement and prison imposed under B. So you say B is applying, right?
Correct. Maybe I misunderstood Justice Rogensack's point. Certainly the state is not saying that B doesn't apply. The limitation is, our reading of the statute is that sub B deals with how you calculate the maximum confinement time without an enhancer. If you don't have an enhancer or before you add the enhancer, this is how much confinement time is the maximum that could be imposed. If you have an enhancer, then you go to subsection C, which deals specifically with penalty enhancement, and you follow the guidelines of 2C, to tell you what do you do with this six-year penalty enhancer. And 2C provides that you take that penalty enhancer and you apply it to the confinement time, which, under a bifurcated sentence structure, necessarily increases the overall imprisonment time. And then if you get, I'm sorry.
Isn't it true that the only time a mathematical computation is required is when you have an unclassified felony? Because in all other cases of classified felonies, the amount of available confinement time is specified
Correct.
In the statute. And
Correct.
So sub 2B6 applies only to unclassified felonies, the
Exactly.
75% rule.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
And we don't need to come up with any kind of a mathematical formula for classified felonies. The statute specifies one for unenhanced unclassified felonies.
Exactly.
And the statute also speaks directly to which portion of the bifurcated sentence the penalty enhancement applies to. So this really isn't as hard as everybody's making it out to be.
Exactly. And that's why the state believes its approach is correct. It follows the language of the statutes, but it's also easiest to apply. And it seems unlikely that the legislature intended there to be this need for all these complex formulas. And if they had intended that, which there's no legislative history to suggest that intent, in fact, the legislative history supports the contrary, that you do apply it only to the confinement time. But it seems that if the legislature intended this to be this complicated, that you have to do all these mathematical computations, it seems likely that the legislature would have more clearly specified that and perhaps would have even provided some guidance as to how you do this, which is what the Court of Appeals tries to do, comes up with these calculations on how you apply their approach, but that doesn't comport with the language of the statutes.
And isn't it also true that now all felonies are classified pursuant to the CPSC's legislation and TIS 2? So subsection B6 has very limited utility going forward and really only applies to that limited universe of inmates who are serving Truth in Sentencing 1 sentences for unclassified felonies.
That is correct. And the other change in Act 109 is that would not affect this case, even if it were an Act 109 case, but many of the penalty enhancers no longer work as penalty enhancers, they're sentencing aggravators. However, the repeater enhancer, which is at issue here, would still exist, so wouldn't eliminate the problem if this case came up under Act 109.
Let me apply your calculation.
Okay.
And we're just really going to only talk about fleeing.
Okay.
Which is the unclassified, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, the maximum confinement under fleeing is 2 years, 3 months, right?
Yes, that is
and
correct.
And the maximum imprisonment is 36 months.
Correct.
Right? Which means that the maximum extended supervision, we're not looking at enhancement now, is 9 months, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you would add 6 years to the maximum confinement.
Yes.
And you get 8 years, 3 months. That's pretty simple, right? Well,
checking
two
my math.
Years, three
yes.
months
right.
plus 6 years is
right.
8 years, 3 months.
Yes.
And you'd add you'd add 6 years to the maximum imprisonment, right?
Then yes.
You get nine.
Right.
Right? So you get 8 years, 3 months is 99 months, right?
Yes.
And 9 years is 108 months, right?
Yes.
All right. So the maximum you can do on the bifurcated trial is 108 months. Okay. So you say that since we've added all of the 6 years to confinement, we can give him confinement of 99 months, right?
Right.
And the maximum extended supervision can only be 9 months. Because you have 99
108
months.
108 minus 99.
Pardon me?
Yeah, it would be 108 months
sure.
plus 99 months.
So
right.
that's all I'm doing. I'm doing rather
right.
rather simple math on you. And that's what your recommendation is.
Exactly.
Right.
And the
okay.
minimum extended supervision, which is what sub 2D of the statute provides, that's where the state and the Court of Appeals differ. The state believes that that statute, by virtue of its plain language, means that the minimum, to calculate the minimum extended supervision, you take 25% of the pre-enhancer confinement time. So under your analysis here, the maximum pre-enhancer confinement time was?
2 years, 3 months.
27 months, so you would take 25% of that, which I came up with 6.75 months, that would be the minimum that would have to be allocated to extended supervision. As long as you did that, you're in full compliance with the statutes.
And you could have gone up to 9 months max.
Correct. So extended supervision could have been anywhere from 6.75 months to 9 months. Right.
Okay. That's your calculation. And under your 8 years, 3 months, you get up to 9 months is max.
I'm sorry, I'm
You're asking for 99 months confinement and 9 months extended supervision as the max that can be applied. For a total of 108. You could drop 99 months to something else.
Right, and get more extended supervision yeah. time, which is what was done here. He got 2 years extended supervision.
But we're looking at total max, and total max for confinement and total max for extended supervision because, and I think you probably agree with the defendant, that the trial court had to understand what the maximums were in order to correctly use its discretionary exercise of power
right.
to give less than the max, right?
Right. And the trial court did believe that the 6 years was applied to the confinement term. It got its math a little wrong at
right.
one point and came up with 7.5 years instead of 8 or something, but understood that the penalty enhancer added 6 years to confinement time only.
It got up to 90 months instead of 99 months, which
right.
you calculated.
But if the trial court, as you say, generally got it correct, is your bottom line here that the court could affirm what the trial court or the Court of Appeals decision is, or do you think we have to go back for resentencing?
I think if you interpret the statutes the way the state is asking you to, you can just affirm.
Because it was under
the
max.
Exactly.
Right.
And the trial court's math was a little bit off, but it still correctly understood that it could only apply the enhancer to the confinement time.
Right. Harmless error.
Did do that.
Right.
Yes.
Harmless error.
Right.
There's no indication that the trial court, in imposing the sentence that it did, was attempting to peg the sentence to the available maximums, is there?
No.
Okay.
No.
So we don't have that problem in this case?
No, not at all. I mean, he got 6 years confinement, 2 years extended supervision on each count.
Which, as Justice Wilcox points out, is well under the available maximums, however they're calculated,
exactly,
in whatever formula you use.
Exactly.
But as to the statutory interpretation issues that are present in this case, sub D, as I read it by its terms, this is a 973.01 sub 2, has nothing to do with statutory maximums, either confinement maximums or extended supervision maximums, which are specified elsewhere.
Correct.
All it says is that the judge has to impose a term of extended supervision that is at least 25% of the term of confinement that the judge has imposed. So we don't even have to look at sub D for purposes of determining statutory maximums. Those are specified elsewhere in the statute.
Correct.
That's different from the argument that you're making.
Well, I agree with you that, let me just make sure I'm understanding correctly.
Sub D talks about minimum term of extended supervision and talks about the sentence that is actually imposed. It has nothing to do with the legislatively determined statutory maximums for confinement time or for extended supervision. Those are specified in sub B and sub C.
I think I can agree with that, but I want to make sure that I'm not undermining my argument with respect to 2D, because maybe I'm not meshing the two, your point and my argument, together correctly. But the state's point with respect to 2D is, in light of the Court of Appeals decision, which is why the only reason this came up at all, the Court of Appeals applied 2D, that 25% minimum extended supervision rule, to the pre-enhancer confinement time plus the enhancer confinement time. To that, they're saying you have to take 25% of the total of the confinement time that is imposed. The state is saying that by its language, when it says 25% of the length of the term of confinement in prison imposed under paragraph B, the state understands that to mean that you take 20, to determine the minimum extended supervision, you take 25% of the term of confinement under B, which is the pre-enhancer confinement time. So, for example, in this case, if we go back to the fleeing unclassified felony, the pre-enhancer maximum confinement time that Jackson faced was 27 months. Therefore, if you take 2D and apply the 25% minimum extended supervision rule, you would have to take 25% of that 27 months. And as long as that's the minimum.
Here's my problem with that. My problem with that is you're just looking at B, but C increases B. C says B is increased by an enhancer. So it makes sense to me when you look at B and D and say, oh, well, D only applies to the confinement under B, and you say, that's right, and B just gives a flat amount. But C adds to B.
I don't think so. I think B, C, and D are fully consistent.
Well, it says the maximum term of confinement specified in B may be increased. So now you've got B increased by the penalty enhancement.
But if the legislature had intended D to apply to the, this gets a little confusing. If the legislature had intended that 25% in D,
right,
to apply to the confinement time after the penalty enhancer is added, it would have specified that language would read 25% of the length of the term of confinement in prison imposed under paragraph B or C, because under C, you're right, you're adding to it.
Right. But that's because you are limiting B to just B and not, you're ignoring C. You can read, I mean, that's a good reading. I'm not debating
I disagree that I'm ignoring it, but.
Well, because I'm reading it to say B is 2 years.
Right.
Under Class E. But B becomes more than that when you add C, and C tells you to add to B. Therefore, when you get to D, when you're looking at B, B is no longer as originally written. It's with the add-on in C. That's another way of interpreting all this.
I think I better understand what you're saying.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. So it's another way of, at least arguably, you've got two ways of interpreting this. The other interesting thing about it is, as I listened to Justice Sykes' question, she is reading imposed under D, 25% or less length of the term of confinement in prison imposed, which can be read in two ways. It can be read, imposed means whatever B says. That is, for Class E felony, 2 years. Or 2 years plus 6 years, for a total of 8 years, which is what you're arguing. Or you can read imposed to mean that sentence which the sentencing court actually hands down. Right? Because that's the one that's imposed. I have trouble with the latter reading, because if you look at B, the portion of a bifurcated sentence that imposes a term of confinement, so it looks like it's different than that which the sentencing court says. Do you know what I mean?
Right. I think I understand. A court could actually impose something different than what's spelled out in D.
That's right. And therefore, you can say D, as to the 25%, really only goes to what the sentencing court ultimately does, because of the used word imposed.
Correct.
Makes sense.
Right.
Except that B uses the word imposed, too, to mean something different.
I see the conflict that you're pointing out, which I don't know that I had picked up on that.
No, I don't think that, and you did not argue that issue.
Right.
You're just arguing the issue that your 25% does not go to the enhancer.
Correct. And part of that, I mean, I think that tracks the language of the statute, but as I previously mentioned, I think everyone would agree that the Court of Appeals approach is very difficult to follow.
Well, I followed it down to the last calculation.
Right. I mean, there are many steps, and for people who aren't as good at math, it's very difficult to follow what they're doing and where they came up with some of those calculations. In fact, you know, Justice Rogensack, who is good at math, has a question about, or was it you, that had a question about whether it should be divided by, whether it should be divided by four or five, and I don't personally know the answer to that question, whether they got their math wrong by dividing by four or five. I've tried to sort that out myself. And
if you use the formula I gave you and X is equal to the sentence that can be imposed in that formula, you will find it doesn't matter. It works out exactly to the same number. I wouldn't have divided it by five either, but I would have used the formula that I gave you, but it comes up to the same.
Okay, so perhaps there's at least an easier mathematical calculation. But
I need to go back to this issue of sub 2D again, and the notion that there is a mathematical computation that is required in every single case, whether you're dealing with a classified felony or an unclassified felony. First of all, that has never been the interpretation of Truth in Sentencing. Isn't that correct? That computation is only required for unclassified felonies. It is not required
for 2B6, yes. But for 2D, you still have to come up with 25% for
25%
ES.
25% of the sentence that the judge actually imposes.
Right.
Any other interpretation would require the imposition of a fixed amount of extended supervision in every case, including classified felonies. And that is not a proper interpretation of the statute, nor is any court doing that. That would require 20 years of extended supervision in a Class B felony. It would require 10 years of extended supervision in every BC felony, and so on down the line. That cannot be a proper interpretation of the statute. And
I guess I think maybe I'm confused.
Suggest that anyone is applying that.
I think I'm confused. If I'm looking at, let's say, a Class B felony, which under B1, the maximum term of confinement
is 40 years,
40, which
leaves
you, you've got 20 years as maximum term of extended supervision. However, it is my understanding that the truth in sentencing training I've gone to still says that the minimum extended supervision has to be 25% of whatever this ultimate term of confinement is
the judge
imposed.
So if the judge has 40 years of confinement time available on a Class B felony, and the judge imposes 10 years instead of the full 40.
It's 25% of 10 years.
Right. And the period of extended supervision that the judge imposes has to be a minimum of 25% of that, or 2.5 years. It can
right.
be more,
right.
but it cannot be less.
Then I guess we're
and
in
so
a
sub D only pertains to the sentence that the judge imposes. It doesn't pertain to calculation of available maximums, except perhaps in the case of unclassified felonies under 2B6, which is not a problem anymore because everything is classified.
I think I understand, and I think that I agree. I do agree.
So what we're talking about in this case is only that small universe of inmates, as I indicated earlier, that are now serving sentences, TIS-1 sentences, truth in sentencing 1 sentences for unclassified felonies who got the maximum confinement time under a penalty enhancer. Right?
Got the
so a very small population.
I believe that's correct.
Justice Bradley.
Counsel, in listening and reading the briefs and the various opinions of those who have tried to figure this out and the various opinions or possible suggestions that have come from the bench and your emphasis on what you've learned in the training, I just come back. If I were sitting in the audience and I'd say, none of this is clear. How can anyone, including the defendant, talk about the clear language of the statute when you have so many different interpretations from the same language? Can you respond to that?
Well, I can certainly try to. I mean, I think we've tried to do that by going through each of these subsections of the statute. What I think is clear, I don't think I've heard dispute except from Mr. Jackson's attorney, I think it is clear that we don't bifurcate the penalty enhancer. We don't apply any of the penalty enhancer to extended supervision.
Your interpretation is that his is when you take 939.62 and then you do. So that's, and he, in fact, he's arguing the clear language of the statute. That's what he's
true. He's suggesting the clear language says that. I'm certainly saying the clear language suggests otherwise. So in that sense, maybe it's not clear at all. I don't know. But I think when you look at the statutes together and the intent of truth in sentencing and the legislative history, the statutes need to be read the way the state is proposing, at least with respect to how you apply the penalty enhancers. Maybe this 25% extended supervision thing is more confusing. That seems certainly more problematic. But at least with respect to how you apply the penalty enhancer, it seems that the clearer reading of the statutes when you read them together, and as I believe you pointed out, even if there were, he's saying it's clear, but even if there were some conflict, you would look to the more specific statute, which is the truth in sentencing provision, in 2C, which tells you how you apply the penalty enhancer.
Counsel, why should we decide this case? It doesn't make any difference to the defendant on the basis of what you say, right?
I think
that doesn't matter what the Court of Appeals said, right? It doesn't make any difference to this defendant.
Apparently not, and it doesn't in the sense that he got less than what he's even proposing.
So why are we? And this is of limited application. right? Only, I think, what, 3 years and 1 month?
True. I think because, while Justice Sykes has certainly suggested, and I'm inclined to agree that there's probably only a few people that this is going to affect.
Right, because now we're down to unclassified only,
right,
and I agree with that.
I still think that there are going to be those cases where there's still going to be some confusion over what exactly this language means, particularly when you throw in the Court of Appeals calculations. If a sentencing court is faced with one of those persons that it has to sentence and apply these statutes, this court can provide guidance on how exactly
that works. Are there any cases in the pipeline?
I'm not personally aware of any.
Did you check?
I didn't check specifically, no.
Well, the threshold question about whether you bifurcate a penalty enhancer under sub C or whether you apply it entirely to the confinement portion of the sentence to arrive at your available maximums certainly survives TIS 2. And
yes.
if we were to adopt Mr. Schubert's argument on that, we would be radically changing everybody's understanding about how to do it.
Correct.
As to the unclassified, as to the classified.
As to the classified.
Right. Right.
Did the Department of Justice assist in the formulation of Truth in Sentencing 1, I guess it was?
I think that there were some people that looked at some language. I don't know. I don't recall specifically to what extent anyone was involved.
Well, why do you think that 93962 was not amended?
None of the penalties, the language, the penalties were increased, but the language in the penalty provisions by use of that word imprisonment, those were not changed. I'm not sure exactly what the rationale was for that, but perhaps because they exist even without Truth in Sentencing. There are still going to be cases that, at least certainly when Truth in Sentencing 1 was passed, there were still going to be non-Truth in Sentencing cases. And so those penalty provisions and the penalty enhancer still needed to be applied to those cases. So I think they try to cover everything in 97301 to explain how those existing statutes and what the language in them means.
I'm sorry, but 93962 was amended. It just wasn't amended on that. But it was amended so that it, if you look at it as of a particular date with TIS, it was amended. So they were brought to the same date or approximately the same date. It just that 93962 wasn't amended in terms of the particular language addresses issue here. So it's not really necessarily correct to say it's one is later than the other, because in that sense, it's true 93962, as originally drafted, preceded it. But they did tinker with it. They just didn't tinker with this.
Right. That is a correct statement. My statement was inaccurate, but I think it still holds true that 97301 is more specific and speaks to how we apply it.
So it may be specific versus general rather than later versus earlier.
I think that's correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harmon. So you're asking for a max of 99 months plus 9 extended supervision as the maximum here for the unclassified.
99 plus. I'm sorry, can you say that
99
again?
99 months confinement, 9 months extended supervision as the max.
Yes.
But you're saying, just so I can find out, you're saying that the decision by the circuit court was acceptable to the state as long as it was under the maximum?
Yes. The problem we have...
Excuse me. You have to
get a
microphone.
I still have this
microphone
on.
Now.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Now I forgot what we were talking about. The trial court, I agree with your statement that the trial court got it right, just kind of got its math a little wrong, but the sentences that were actually imposed were well under the maximum that could have been imposed.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Schubert?
never seen such cooperation between counsel.
Yeah, I think she turned the mic down. Yeah, it's fine.
I don't think your mic is on, counsel. There's a button that says off and on at the is it the bottom? Okay, got it.
Thank you. Justice Rogensack, the formula you gave me is actually the formula applied by the Court of Appeals.
Right.
To determine that, you know, you have to have 25% of the, at least 25% of initial incarceration has to be the amount of extended supervision. Right. And Justice Sykes, I believe that, yeah, in most cases, you know, the judge imposes a sentence under the max, and initial incarceration has to be 25% of initial confinement, no matter what it is. But the Court of Appeals pointed out that, and I don't really agree with their decision, but I guess they were saying that, but when you do get to the max, is this statutory provision serves to limit the max.
But only in the case of unclassified felonies.
It would be
no longer a problem under TIS 2. It is a problem for the 3+ years of TIS 1.
We'd submit this
decision, at least on that question, has limited impact. On the threshold question, it potentially has significant impact.
We'd submit that the 25%, right, since the other statutes tell you how much initial confinement you can have, right. In essence.
Right.
But when you get involved with penalty enhancers that add to the penalties, then you have to apply that statute. And I maintain that's the same reason that, or at least that would be the Court of Appeals argument. But I would say that it would apply to that statutory provision, the 25%, would apply to every case where you're adding a penalty enhancer.
Well, it sounds to me like you're arguing that any time you have a penalty enhancer, you're out of the classification system altogether, and the limitations on available confinement time and extended supervision. Is that the argument that you're making?
No. I'd say that with regard to the offense itself, without the habitual, you got to use what's set forth by the legislature as to the maximum amount of initial confinement. But what do you do when you do add the habitual? And I say that that's when it becomes a felony not specified, because it's a felony with an enhancer. So it's still the same class of felony, everything, but it's a felony with an enhancer. So for that enhancer, you have to apply that 75% rule.
Well, that's why the legislature spoke in sub C about what to do with penalty enhancers, not to lump them under sub B6 with the unclassified felonies, but to specifically direct how they were to be treated.
Well, all it says is the initial confinement time may be increased.
Right.
And it says that the length of the sentence increased by the confinement time. It doesn't mean you can't increase the length of the sentence by something else just because it says the confinement time increases the sentence. It's not a limiting provision. And that provision really doesn't say you can't provide it, you can't increase the extended supervision. In the context of a whole statute section dealing with confinement, all it says is we can increase confinement. But you can increase your sentences by extended supervision, by fines, by all sorts of penalty enhancers.
Well, the fines aren't implicated here, because that's not what any of this is speaking to.
But it makes a point. Because, again, fines don't increase confinement. The length of imprisonment doesn't increase confinement by that amount.
Fines are money. We're talking about time in prison. So the fines issue is a complete red herring as far as I'm concerned. Sub C has to be read as saying don't bifurcate the penalty enhancer. It increases the confinement time. Otherwise, it is meaningless.
But it doesn't.
Right, which means don't bifurcate it. It increases the statutorily available confinement time, not the statutorily available extended supervision, which means don't bifurcate it. It adds to the confinement time. Judge, you don't have to impose all of it. You can impose some of it, none of it, maybe all of it, depending upon the case. Your interpretation reads it entirely out.
Well, I submit my interpretation is one where the statutory construction doesn't have to be. And when you're talking about plain meaning, 1962 still stays in prison. And the decision from this court is important to reconcile that. We had a case where the judge thought that the defendant was wasting more time than he actually was, and made a point of saying it on record and putting it forth as one moment. So it's important to us because of the mission nonetheless, we feel it should be reduced.
Chief, may I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
That gets to the issue of remedy. And your opposing counsel says, hey, look, you know, he got less than even what you're arguing, so why, no harm, no foul. Why do you think that doesn't make sense, and why are you arguing for a different kind of remedy?
We feel that the sentence should be
what sort of a sentence does that yield then?
I believe, Your Honor, that actually the reduction of the sentence that we're asking for with regard to the initial confinement time to 65 months instead of 6 years before. A
little over 5 years? A little over 5 years? A little over 5 years, is that right?
Yes, 65.
And he got six.
Yes. So it's a 7 month reduction. Your Honor, in talking about the claim, one thing that must be said, the PSI rate, and according to your comment on that, the PSI rate said that in this case, we have penalty enhancements that apply. The penalty enhancements call for a 6-year increase in maximum amount of imprisonment. And the rate goes on to say that, of course, the amount of initial confinement.
So that was their interpretation, the DOC, or at least that particular person. Okay.
We have the benefit of the Wisconsin law article, the benefit of the seminars, where, in fact, we're not applying the meaning of the statute. And you would like to see the defendant respectfully ask to reply to the meaning of the statute.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Schubert, and thank you, Mr. Herman, for not only a statutory interpretation, but a lesson in mathematics that we probably all could use. So that concludes the hearing on 02-0947-CR, State v. Michael D. Jackson. If the students who wish to will remain here,